Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Friday, all the regular Friday features. We don't have any Nick D Show spies, though, this week. I guess nobody was talking about me on the radio. But we do have Straight Out of Context, Fly James Friday, and You Big Dummy to talk about. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. As you just heard, the greatest game show theme song of all time was just played, because we're going to be talking about, well, we're going to talk about a lot of game shows this morning, throughout the morning, but specifically Match Game. Match Game is, I think, everybody would arguably agree that it's the best game show of all time. And so we're going to talk about Match Game with the author of a book called Match Game 101, which is like a 500-page comprehensive book about Match Game. And you might not know about some of the history of the Match Game, because it came in different, there were different forms of Match Game. And the author of the book, Match Game 101, is A. Ashley Hoff, and has done an incredible job of comprehensively gathering all this stuff together and putting it into a book. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, very, very, very excited to have you on. I love Match Game. You know, I was born in 1965, so I was a kid when it was on. I watched it every day after school. But there's a lot of history behind Match Game. It wasn't always, you know, it wasn't set up that way when it first started. When Match Game first started, it wasn't the six celebrities and Gene Rayburn and all that stuff. It was a different game. Talk a little bit about how it started.
Well, the show, initially, the first run of the show started in 1962 on New Year's Eve, and then it ended in the late 60s, and then after, you know, Goodson Todman Productions, who produced the show, as well as many other classic game shows, Beat the Clock and all these others, moved all their offices to the West Coast, somebody got the bright idea of reviving the show. And so Match Game 73 was born, but in a completely different format, with the now familiar six celebrity panel and two contestants, you know, vying to, you know, match wits with a band of nitwits.
Yeah.
A celebrity studded nitwits nonetheless.
Yes.
But, and then that's the version that people are most familiar with. And then after that version ended its run, there was a brief Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour, which lasted about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
There was a revival in 1990 and 91 where they tried to recapture some of the elements, and they had Charles Nelson Reilly and Brett appeared for a week's worth of episodes, and, you know, they tried.
Yeah.
It was a good run. They had some really nice things about it. And then in 98-99 they did another version where they reduced the number by one. It was a five celebrity panel with George Hamilton and Vicki Lawrence and Nell Carter and Judy Tenuta, and then a different celebrity each week would be the, you know, guest celebrity. And that lasted, you know, for a year, year and a half. And then various attempts at doing pilots that came this close to getting picked up but didn't quite. And then finally, the new version, currently hosted by Alec Baldwin, which is about to start its fifth season.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is kind of miraculous.
Yeah.
There have been various online fights about, oh, it's not good as good as the original. And, you know, I give them credit for trying. They're finding their own way. I'm championing that. I think that's great. I give them all the encouragement there is. And if people don't like the current version or any of the other subsequent versions, luckily the 70s version of Match Game is available in a box set on DVD. There are episodes uploaded onto YouTube, so you have options.
Yeah, we have a channel called Buzzer. Buzzer.
Oh yes, yes.
And they show it all. They show it every day. Game Show Network shows it every day. I watch it every morning.
I watch it.
I'm not kidding. I watch at least three episodes.
It's like being a kid again, right?
Yeah, no, I love it, and I love all the celebrity stuff, and I just think it's great. Now, Ashley, I've had Dick DiBartolo on the show many times,
And Dick incidentally told me, tell you hello, because he loves you guys. He thinks you're a class act.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, Dick is one of the guys.
And I told him I would.
Dick is one of the main writers, was one of the main writers during the heyday. And he, like, created Dumb Dora and, you know, and all those other ones, the characters and stuff. And he was there because at first it was just like... they would ask questions like, "What would you eat for?" You know, they would what would you eat on Thanksgiving? And then suddenly Dick came up with the idea to do like sort of double entendre, kind of that kind of stuff. And then that's when the show took off. So
exactly, and then became notorious for being the first show to really say things like, you know,
boobs.
Euphemism.
Yeah.
it became what Jack Klugman called a euphemism show. You know, booze and Coward Cosell.
Right.
You know, all these answers that, you know, today, I think the problem that most people have with the current version is that you can get away with so much more.
Oh, yeah.
So the answers are the questions and the answers are much more blatant.
Yeah.
Which, you know, can be funny on one level, but it takes away some of the wit and some of the, you have to hide the answer, you know. You know, they just had to be more subversive in the 70s.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about the people who were on the show. Of course, let's start with Gene Rayburn.
Yeah.
Gene Rayburn, my favorite game show host of all time. He's actually from Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. He was born here.
No, he grew up in Chicago, exactly.
He
was born, I think, in Christopher, Illinois, wherever that is, but he was raised largely in Chicago, went to school in Chicago, and it was there that he actually befriended people like Bert Hillstrom, who was the puppeteer who, along with Fran Allison, co-starred on Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Oh, right.
And they were all in radio together. So Gene and his wife, Helen, were very, very close friends with people like them because they were all kind of like the first graduating class of, you know, Radio 101.
Right.
Moving into television.
Right.
Very early television.
Right.
And Gene had done morning television, which is very like what you do, talk radio.
Right.
And kind of helped shape the format in a lot of ways. He was very innovative.
Yeah.
And, you know, working on the fly on radio, on talk radio, where you guys have to be spontaneous because
right.
you're not working from a script,
right.
Gave him the improv skills that later came in handy for being an MC, which was why he was such a master who could handle pretty much anything that was thrown at him.
Yeah.
Whether contestants would do something silly or the celebrities would come up with some antics, he would just go along with it. He would let it ride, and it became funny. It became the reason to watch the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on top of that, when there were mistakes made, you know, when he pressed the button and
right.
the thing holding the questions would fail to raise, he could turn it into a bit
right.
because, of course, that's what you had to do in live radio and live TV.
Mm-hmm. I love it when he talks to the guy who's inside the screen. You know, the guy he'll bang on the window
during the super match.
The super match, yeah. When he'll knock on the thing and say, "Hey, all right, slide it, Earl." And
exactly. Yeah. You know, it was interesting because I wrote this book primarily between 2002 and 2005.
Mm-hmm.
When luckily the majority of people were still with us, and I was trying to track down, you know, this was before Facebook, so I had to track people down using everything from the phone book to calling up the unions, and I had to kind of, you know, I've honed my detective skills
yeah.
in researching the book.
Yeah.
And I tried tracking down Earl. By the time I, you know, was able, he had apparently already passed away.
Mm.
But I was able to basically pick everybody else's brain and find out, tell me about Earl. What was Earl like? You know, because everybody knows, you know, Charles and Fanny and Brett and Betty White. Nobody really knows the stagehands. Nobody knows the crew members. And I think that was one of the reasons, really, I wanted the book to be, why it's a 499-page book,
yeah.
because I really wanted to give a kind of a shine a spotlight on the people who never get really thanked.
Yeah. I think that's great. I think that's great.
Because they really were the ones, along with everybody seen on screen, who helped make that show the classic that we're still watching 40-odd years later.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. I'm glad you shine a light on it. Ashley, hang on, okay?
Yes.
Okay, we have to take a break. A. Ashley Hoff is with us. The book is called Match Game 101. If you are a fan of the Match Game, you need to get this book. And we're going to come back and talk more about it after we take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday. We're going to talk about game shows for a lot of the show this morning, and then we'll have our regular Friday features coming up as well. Welcome back. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. We are talking with the author of a terrific book called Match Game 101, which is probably the most comprehensive book ever written about Match Game, the greatest game show of all time. And we're having a good time talking with A. Ashley Hoff, who is the author of Match Game 101, and let's bring him back. Ashley, welcome back.
Thank you, thank you.
I do want to say that I love the picture of you and Charles Nelson Reilly. It's just fantastic. So you got to meet Charles Nelson Reilly.
Yes. Well, basically, my birthday, which was May 21st of 2002, my friend John Schultz, a fellow Columbia College grad, took me as a kind of a gift to see Charles do his one-man show at the Cannon Theater in Beverly Hills.
Oh, man.
and I had already had the notion of writing the book. And then, you know, we found out that, oh, Charles was going to be performing his one-man show for a few weeks in Beverly Hills. And I thought, okay, I'm going to talk to Charles about this. And essentially, and Charles was a great guy. He was a gracious guy. He was a gracious host. The one thing about all these people that you saw, when you saw them, Brett Summers, Charles Nelson Reilly, when you saw these people on the panel, they were exactly like that in life as they were on camera.
Mm.
And because everything was done improv, there, you know, they didn't have scripts ahead of them. They didn't have anything planned out. You know, they might say, oh, let's pull a routine or something like that. But generally speaking, everything that happened on camera happened spontaneously.
Yeah.
And so you got a real feel for what these people were like in life, and I think that's one of the big draws of the show and why people still care about it. People are endlessly curious about other human beings. The number of quote-unquote reality shows we have and the gossip magazines we have prove that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons people responded to Match Game so much and still talk about it is because we have these wonderful people, these wonderful raconteurs and great storytellers and great personalities, and they were just simply themselves, you know, as if they were at a party in somebody's living room playing charades.
Yeah.
And having a drink and chatting and, you know, gossiping and carrying on, bickering and bantering back and forth. And that was what they were really like. Charles was exactly like what you saw on the show.
Yeah.
Brett was exactly like what you saw on the show. I flew to New York twice to see her one-woman show and talked with her extensively via the telephone. These people became friends. Marcia Wallace had me on her Christmas card list.
Oh.
And I met these people that I grew up watching. I mean, Betty White. I've known Betty White my entire life.
Yeah.
And so has everybody else.
Yeah.
Because she was, Alan Ludden used to joke, she was a pioneer of silent television. She was there doing an experimental television broadcast when she was a high school senior.
Right.
Wow. And this was before there was real television. This was just an experimental thing.
You know, you're mentioning all these names, some of the classic panelists. I mean, obviously, we have the three regulars. You've got Richard, you've got Brett, you've got Charles. But people like Elaine Joyce, who I love. Fannie Flagg, obviously, legend. You mentioned Marshall. Yeah. You mentioned Marshall Wallace. Orson Bean is another another guy who shows up on the shows pretty regularly.
Oh yeah,
and these were all people.
Patty Deutsch.
Oh God, I love Patty Deutsch. And you know, and it was just they were all really great personalities. And I, every time I watched the show, I remember how much I loved these people, these panelists who were on the show, the semi regular ones. It was just so much fun to watch these people. You know.
Yeah. And that's because one of the things that Orson Bean had told me when we talked about the show, he talked about how back in that era, actors and actresses were bred to be raconteurs. They were storytellers. They were not simply reciting lines. They were personalities. And whatever personality quirks they had were cultivated and brought out, not... They weren't trying to be bland and interchangeable and like everybody else. Nobody tried to fit in that sense. It really, people at that time, audiences at least, and I guess as a result, casting directors and producers, valued individuals, particularly the spikier the personality, the sharper the wit, and the more they were, you know, valued.
Yeah.
And that's why people like, you know, Charles Nelson Reilly... despite being a somewhat flamboyant gay man, was nonetheless welcomed into American, Midwestern American living rooms on a daily basis and welcomed with open arms.
Yeah.
All these people, it was interesting because when I talked with Scully Mitchell, we talked about the racial issue and racial humor of the 70s, and we talked about how at that time... Game shows were kind of like a subversive way of bringing relevant social issues into people's living rooms,
mm-hmm.
but in a non-threatening manner. You know, you could watch the 6 o'clock news, or you could watch a game show that happened to have conversation about kind of the same things, but joking about it, you softening the blow, yet still making particular points. So they might have a question that dealt with, say, the Vietnam War, or they might have a question that dealt with, you know, the gas shortages that were prevalent at that time, or they might talk about politics, you know, Nixon and Carter and the various issues. But it was in a non-threatening manner. It was funny, but it still made people think, or it still got some sort of a point across.
Yeah.
You know, game shows were kind of subversive activism.
Yeah. It's true. Now, let me ask you a couple of quick questions. Was there a lot of drinking on the set?
When I sat down with Patty Deutsch, we had lunch at La Conversation, which is a restaurant in West Hollywood. And I said to her just as we sat down, "Oh, I have so many questions for you." And she said, "Do they involve drinking?" And she just said it in her typical deadpan tone because she said she had just been approached by a cable TV show, and all they wanted to know was about the drinking on the set.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, quite honestly, yes, they would have a cocktail or wine at the lunchtime, you know, the meal between the shows.
Right.
But the thing was, there's been this rumor going on around that everybody had to be poured into their seats, and that was where all the humor stemmed from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been played up way too much because, first of all, it discredits the actual wit and talent involved with these people.
Right.
And secondly, you know, there were times, they definitely got giddy. They definitely, you know, you could tell, as Deborah Lee Scott told me, you know, those styrofoam cups that you see us drinking from every night, not coffee. and you know, Brett was totally upfront about it. You know, she said I'd get a vodka and club soda. Now, where it came from, I never asked, but I just knew there was a bottle of vodka somewhere, and there was some ice somewhere, and there was some club soda. And so they'd have a drink, but and they would play it up because it was the '70s. It was that era.
Yeah,
it was the era of, you know, Foster Brooks coming on and doing his drunk routine, despite the fact that Foster Brooks had been sober for, you know, 20 years at that point.
Yeah.
So they played it up. And sometimes, you know, you could tell somebody had a little extra drink. You know, there were a few antics that, you know, somebody might have been definitely feeling their oats a bit, but they weren't poured into their seat.
Yeah, no, you know what? You can't if you're loaded before you even start taping, you can't be as witty as they were. You know what I mean?
Well, the other thing is, you know, let's face it, you're sitting on this set for a couple hours at a time. If you have to run to the restroom every 2 seconds, if you have to run to makeup because you're either sweating or flushed red because you've had too much vodka, you know, nobody at that time was going to jeopardize their career by appearing drunk in public.
Yeah.
People forget that at that time, when there were only a handful of networks, it would jeopardize your career if producers, directors, writers thought for a minute that you were unreliable or you were going to be a big drunk on set and they couldn't count on you to deliver.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously the rumors have been around for anybody who's a fan of the show. You know, they always talk about, oh, they were drunk and blah, blah, blah. And I never believed it. I maybe, you know, had a few cocktails here and there, but I never believed that they were drunk. Ashley, hang on, okay? Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Okay, Ashley, Ashley Hoff is with us. He's written a terrific book called Match Game 101, which is a very comprehensive, almost 500-page book about the best game show of all time. We're going to come back and talk more with Ashley after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Of a wave, it's like magic. Oh, rolling and riding. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio on a Friday morning. We're going to be talking more game shows as we roll on this morning, having a lot of fun with that topic. And it's Friday, so the regular Friday features will be coming up, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest is A. Ashley Hoff, the author of Match Game 101, incredibly comprehensive book about the best game show of all time. Let's bring Ashley back. Ashley, welcome back.
It's so funny because every time you call it the best game show of all time, I just think to myself, oh, what's Peter Marshall thinking right now? Peter was actually the first person that I interviewed for the book because he had done the 60s version of Match Game as a guest a few times, but also he was a close friend of Gene Rayburn.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been, he and Gene's elder brother had been NBC pages together. And so when Gene then joined NBC staff as a page, he and Peter were working together. So they had known each other for decades prior to their respective hosting gigs. Peter,
right,
obviously hosting Hollywood Squares in its classic format, Gene hosting Match Game.
Right. Well, you mentioned earlier that that hideous Match Game Hollywood Squares hour that they did with John Bauman hosting the Hollywood Squares part. You know, they're airing that on the Game Show Network. They actually show it.
I heard that. You know, I've seen a few episodes. I've seen a couple of episodes, but at that time there weren't a lot of episodes available. I got mine. I don't even know how I got mine, but I got them on like a bootleg tape from somebody.
Yeah.
That was the time I wrote the book, again, sometime between 2002 and 2005. It was before YouTube was really as comprehensive as it now is.
Right.
So,
it's something,
you know,
funny. Yeah, it's something. So let's talk about Richard Dawson, because there are a lot of stories about Dawson, and sometimes you could actually see him hate being there, I'm assuming that happened after he got Family Feud and he didn't want to be at Match Game anymore, and he made that abundantly clear.
That was toward the end.
Yeah.
I will say this, there are a lot of people who are very either pro Richard or anti Richard, and people who, you know, will say a lot of unflattering things about Richard Dawson, and I'm going to say this. Everybody I talked to, without fail, spoke very highly of Richard and very respectfully of him.
Mm-hmm.
Brett was someone who, you know, was never going to be, you know, she was never going to fake it, but she always spoke very respectfully of Richard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was the first person to say that while they were not necessarily each other's cup of tea, necessarily, he was a great game player, he was highly intelligent, he was able to just match up with those contestants, and he really cared about helping them win money. And everybody that I spoke to for this book was very complimentary, not only toward each other, but also toward the show itself.
Mm-hmm.
They were very respectful of the format. They were respectful of each other. And I think that speaks highly of everybody involved.
Yeah.
You hear all these horror stories about other TV shows where, you know, the co-stars couldn't stand each other and the director, and they would have fights and all this kind of stuff. None of that happened on the Match Game set. Everybody got along. Richard became disenchanted toward the end, but at the same time, there were very few incidents of actual blow-up.
Yeah.
It was really only the final week, the final taping, where his, you know, displeasure became visible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, c'est la vie.
Yeah.
There it is. It's committed to tape, but, you know, we can always watch the other episodes.
You know, you were just talking about how they got along. I think that's one of the reasons why the show is just so wonderful and watchable, is because you could tell that they're just having a good time, and everybody on that stage likes each other.
Right.
And that's one of the things, especially between Charles and Brett. I just love those two so much. I think they're so funny, and I just think that the chemistry between the two of them was really, really special.
Oh, well, one of the things I had asked Brett, I said, did people ever think you two were married? And she said, oh, yes. Every now and then, you know, during the commercial break, somebody would stand up and say, Mr. Rayburn, are Brett and Charles married? And, you know, they obviously confused Charles with Jack Klugman,
right,
because they knew that, you know, Brett was married to somebody in show business.
Yeah.
And I had joked with her once that they should do a bus and truck revival of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, because I would have paid a fortune to see that.
Oh, me too. Are you kidding? That would have been fantastic.
Oh, my gosh.
That would have been fantastic. Let's talk a little bit. Where did the microphone come from? The Gene Rayburn microphone?
The Sony ECM-51.
Oh, is that what it's called?
I think so. Bob Barker had the same microphone, but he did not usually extend his.
Right.
It was a telescopic microphone, and I had asked Mark Bowerman, I think it was, one of the sound guys, did its being telescopic have any particular additional pickup properties? And they said no. No, but it was essentially just for show. It was the design.
Yeah.
You could have a short microphone or extended microphone, and, you know, one could, you know, make any jokes one wants about that. You know, it's a fabulous prop. In the British version of the show called Blankety Blank, Terry Wogan, who hosted the show, there was, incidentally, a British version of Match Game called Blankety Blank, and he actually had a similar microphone. I don't know if it was the exact same model, but it was very close. And in one very memorable episode, Kenny Everett, British comedian,
yeah,
who was very popular at the time, famously bent the microphone, and, you know, it became then this running joke about bending the long, skinny mic. And obviously that never happened in the U.S. version, but it was definitely an eye-catching piece.
Yeah. No. And now, did you talk to contestants about their appearances on the show?
I talked to Brian Leary, who was actually the only person, she was the sole person who had graduated from contestant to celebrity panelist. She was a young actress who had appeared on Chip and Black Sheep Squadron in the 70s. She did a number of guest shots. But she had started as a contestant. She's the primary contestant that I'd spoken with, because most of the civilian ones that I tried to track down, I think I found a couple of things online that were just quick little quotes.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I wasn't able to find anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that dates probably to the fact that when I was writing the book primarily, it was before there was really as much on the internet devoted to it.
Now, am I wrong? Was Kirstie Alley a contestant on Match Game? I know she was on Password.
She was.
Yeah.
Yes, I think she did both.
Yeah, she did. I know she was on Password. Yeah.
Diane Janiver, who was the contestant coordinator on the show in the 70s, she had, during the 60s, been the associate producer of the NBC version of Match Game, but in the 70s, she was contestant coordinator. And she had remembered Kirstie Alley coming in to audition for the show, and she really remembered these bright green eyes and this beautiful look. She looked like a young Lauren Bacall.
Yeah.
Recalled Diane.
Yeah.
And she came in. She was sharp. She was a great contestant. She was a very disciplined, you know, person. And when you see her on the show, you can tell that she, you know, she might have been a little nervous, but she was out there to win money. And
she did very well. If I remember correctly, she did very well.
She did. She did. I would have to go back and watch the episode, but I'm thinking she won something like $10,000.
Yeah, I think she was on for a couple of days. You know, she was like the champion.
Yeah.
She won. She was a champion. They brought her back like the next day. I think she won. She won a few rounds. I remember her doing very well. She also did very well on Password, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised because she's shown herself to be a very cerebral, you know, very intelligent woman.
Yeah.
A very intelligent actress and very much kind of a sharp, you know, type A person.
Yeah.
So I can see her, you know, being focused enough to win.
Well, listen, you know, I watched the show every morning. I'm not kidding. When I get home from work, I watch it every morning, and I love it. And I've always watched it. You know, like I said, when I was a kid, I would rush home from school to watch Match Game, and I always thought it was really funny. And when I was a kid, I had a crush on Fannie Flagg.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
Fanny in those sweaters.
Yep. With the little weird stuff on them. And the other morning, they ran one when she had like a sparkly Popeye on her, on her chest. But I always had a crush on her, and and Elaine Joyce is another one that I had a crush on. Her and Bobby Van, great together. I think the show is very, very special, and it's timeless. And the book is really comprehensive. Anybody who is a fan of Match Game really needs to get your book. You did an unbelievable job with it.
Well, I thank you for that. It's available at BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. Go into your local bookstore. Just say Match Game 101 by A. Ashley Hoff. The ISBN number I can give you. You know, anybody can look it up in any bookstore.
Yeah.
But it's
out there. It's available, and I highly recommend it. And Ashley, it was really so much fun to talk to you. And if you talk to Dick DiBartolo, tell him I said hi. Okay.
I will indeed. I'll message him tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Ashley.
All right. Have a great night.
You too. A. Ashley Hoff is the name of the author. The book is called Match Game 101. If you are a fan of a Match Game, and you should be, you really need to get this book. It is filled with great pictures and great behind-the-scenes stories. It's incredibly comprehensive. It's incredible that he was able to write a 500-page book about Match Game. It's fantastic. So anyway, I want to thank A. Ashley Hoff. Get the book Match Game 101. And we'll take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN.